to a Hope 103.2 podcast.
I know of a teacher in an Australian private school who begins most mornings with 10 minutes transcendental meditation, a few lines from the Quran, and a rendition of the Lord's Prayer. Now, I suspect his motivation goes beyond religious insurance, covering all his bets, so to speak. But it's certainly an interesting approach to the variety of religions on offer today. By contrast, I've got a number of mates who do virtually nothing of a spiritual nature. No church, no prayers, and except for the occasional sporting event, no experiences of an ecstatic nature either. As strange as it sounds, though, both approaches, I reckon, are just different responses to the one spiritual dilemma. When it comes to faith, there appears to be no clarity, just a lot of noise from the gaggle of competing claims. The vast array of spiritual options leaves many of us bewildered, wondering which, if any, of these is rational, helpful, or true. Some take the so-called pluralist approach and accept all spiritual perspectives as equally valid. Others avoid religion altogether because they don't want to be led up the proverbial garden path. Others, I guess, avoid religion for fear that some of it might actually be true. Over the next week or so, I want to tackle front on the problem of clarity in a world of spiritual plurality. I don't expect I can give the definitive answer, but I do want to go some way toward helping us see that despite all the religious noise out there, the still, small voice of God can still be heard clearly. It seems to me that most of us, whether we're spiritual people or not, have a hunch there's more to life than meets the eye. Late one evening recently, I was enjoying the night sky out on the balcony at a friend's house when a fascinating conversation broke out among the guests of the dinner party next door. They too were out on their balcony. The guests were your classic 20-something Chardonnay yuppies, if that's not too rude a thing to say, and they were hardly what you'd call the religious type. Nevertheless, at one point, the conversation turned decisively to religion. It started with one of the girls telling the others about a wedding she'd been to for some happy, clappy Christians, as she described them. A few light-hearted comments passed about the various Christians they'd come across over the years, and then the conversation suddenly went very deep. One by one, they began to share their own insights into things spiritual. One bloke announced that he preferred the New Age approach because it offered a spirituality that was meaningful but didn't make any of those onerous demands that Christianity apparently insists upon. The rest of them went, in agreement. They really had my attention now. The conversation floated from one aspect of spirituality to another. The design of the universe, prayer, meditation, God, yoga, the church, and so on. But there was one comment in particular that stood out for me as profound and quite self-revealing. One of the girls had made a sarcastic remark about organized forms of worship. I think she was referring to the sort of thing I get up to most Sundays. And then one of her friends responded, "Yeah, but there's something in it, don't you think? I like the idea of being grateful to someone for the things in my life." It could have been my imagination, but the comment seemed to drop in on this dinner party like a revelation. The response from the others was complete silence for at least 2 or 3 seconds, which at this dinner party seemed like an eternity. Now, it was perhaps unethical of me to eavesdrop for as long as I did, about 40 minutes really, but I figured I could justify it as research, something I may even be able to include in a future radio segment or something. From the point of view of someone who writes and speaks on these issues, what struck me about this conversation was just how interesting and interested they all were in things spiritual. You could tell it was the first time they'd articulated their spiritual opinions to each other, but it was equally apparent they'd all thought through these issues at some depth. I came away reminded of something I've known for a long time, but easily forget. No matter how educated, materialistic, or secular our society becomes, questions of spirituality just don't go away. We appear to be incurably inquisitive about realities deeper than our investments, our waistlines, our holidays, our retirement packages, and so on. It's as if something in our world continues to seduce us with questions of faith. Why are we here? What happens at death? To whom can I be grateful? And a thousand other questions which have tantalised the human mind over the centuries. The Sydney Morning Herald actually recently ran a feature article with a similar observation. It was titled Highly Spirited, and it ran the byline, "Despite its materialist veneer, religion is thriving in many different guises in Australia." The writer listed the array of spiritualities he believed to be alive and well in Australia. There were the obvious ones, like Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, and so on. But the informal expressions of religion were especially interesting. He pointed to the New Age movement, the popularity of Wiccan cookbooks, the modern fascination with Aboriginal spirituality, and a host of others. The BBC's Soul of Britain series made a similar observation based on UK research. More than half of those surveyed said they trusted in an afterlife. 62% said they believed in the Almighty, and 69% believed in the existence of a human soul. And you know, the Australian figures are even higher. The World Values Survey, published in 2000 by the Inter-University Consortium for Political and Social Research, reveals that over 80% of Australians believe in God and the soul. Only 5.3% describe themselves as atheists, those who deny God's existence. But it's not just these obvious claims of faith that point to an interest in spirituality. I find it fascinating that some of the prominent atheists of our day have devoted much of their time and energy to spiritual questions. I would have thought that once you've rejected the existence of God and the spiritual realm generally, you would devote yourself to things material and not worry about the spiritual. But this isn't the case. Perhaps the 20th century's greatest atheist was the English philosopher and mathematician Bertrand Russell. He was a man plagued by spiritual questions, even if in the end he was able to suppress them with his rationalizations and attack them in his writings. One of his books was titled Why I Am Not a Christian. When I read it years ago, I was actually encouraged in my Christian faith. His arguments were pretty weak, and he was meant to be the greatest anti-Christian mind of the century. But more than that, I got the distinct impression from reading his book that he was protesting too much, as they say, as if he were actually trying to shake off his own spiritual hunches. Actually, his own daughter said exactly this in a biography of Russell's life. Let me quote from it. "I believe myself that his whole life was a search for God. Indeed, he had first taken up philosophy in the hope of finding proof for God's existence. Somewhere in the back of my father's mind, at the bottom of his heart, in the depths of his soul, there was an empty space that had once been filled by God, and he never found anything else to put in it." So there you go. Whether it's Chardonnay pluralists, like the guests next door, or hardcore atheists like Bertrand Russell, men and women seem strangely drawn toward spiritual questions. It's as if we're wired for God, which of course is exactly the case. I hope you can join me tomorrow night as we turn to what the Bible, God's Word, has to say on this important topic.
Hope 103.2. Thanks for listening.